right. Hey, welcome back to the Accounting Almanac. We're going to talk about all sorts of stuff. I don't know which episode's going to include what, but boy, is it going to be great, no matter what. So a couple things that we're going to talk about are just how to use the chart of accounts to your best advantage. And then also how to communicate with clients in a really great and functional way that allows for good set expectations. So what do you want to start with, Rachel?
I think the chart of accounts, I think it's just the thing that comes up the most during calls with clients and bookkeepers and their uncertainty, like, I want to do this and I want to do that, and which one's right and which one's wrong. And somebody please give me a list and tell me this is the defined list.
I need a chart of accounts that's specific for this industry.
Yeah. Surely there's one list, like the magical chart of accounts fairy can tell me what it must look like, right?
Oh, I love that so much because it just falls right into the QuickBooks. Is going to be so easy. It falls right into the bookkeeping is 2 + 2 = 4. Everything is just exactly the same, regardless of who you are and what you're doing. It's just so not true. And I think people stress a lot more about the chart of accounts than they actually should, but not about the right things.
Well, good point. There's a lot of stress. There's stress on things like, do I use account numbers? Do I not use account numbers?
Oh, yeah.
I typically don't. Do you?
I don't either.
Okay, apparently not.
So I have a few clients, and this is something that I think every bookkeeper who owns a business and works with multiple clients has to decide for themselves, because I definitely know bookkeepers who are like, this is the chart of accounts that you, my client, will use. That's just not my personality, man. Like, you can tell me what you want, I'll do it. So I have clients who have given me the chart of accounts, and I've started with their chart of accounts and worked from there. And I do have some numbers. Do I look at those numbers at any point ever? No. But that's because my brain is a scary place to be, but it also doesn't work that well with numbers, which is funny because I'm a bookkeeper. But I remember the words. So when I'm typing something in to find it, I'm typing the word, not the number.
Yeah, 100% the same. I'm definitely going to type the word. I'm not going to use the mouse to look. And I'm not going to think about the account number. I'm just going to be like, oh, that's the checking account. I will type in checking or main or operating. And eventually it'll appear on my screen like magic. And I'm like, oh, sweet deal. Here we are.
Yes. And so that's a benefit to adjusting chart of accounts. And that's something I will ask my clients. I'll say, hey, do you mind if I just kind of tweak some things? Because I like for the chart of accounts to at least be somewhat consistent in those main things. So like equity accounts, I want it to say owner's distribution or partner's distribution. I don't want to have to look for pay. I don't want to have to look for personal. I don't want to have to look for draw. There are certain words that I use in my search that I want to have be consistent. And so that's one of my tips, I guess, for the chart of accounts is try to be as consistent from client to client as you can, because then your brain doesn't have to think so hard about what do they call it here for this person.
One of my favorite things to do is to put the last 4 digits of the account number for your checking, yeah, savings, credit card.
All of that.
I cannot tell you the number of times you're working with a client who has one bank account, but say that it's a project and you're doing a couple of years worth of work. They have always had one bank account. It just so happens that they've had two different bank accounts and they turned one off and turned another on. And you're like, oh, the statements, they overlap. But if you have your account numbers and your chart of accounts, you can keep track and be like, sweet, new account. Got it.
Yeah. And that's so helpful for loans too. You know, I had a client, actually I've had two clients in the last week ask me for the debt schedule, like a corporate debt schedule. Hey, you know, what are all your loans? I absolutely love being able to copy paste right from my chart of accounts the name of that loan. And so having a consistent naming convention for things within your chart of accounts is great. So I'll do like N/P for any of my notes payable. So that's the beginning of them. Because a lot of times what happens is you have similar names for things that are different. Mm-hmm. And so because QuickBooks is super helpful across the board on everything, when you go to select the account, you can very rarely see the entire description or the entire detail type or whatever, especially if you've got a lot of sub accounts, it's like, I have no idea which one this is. So I always try to keep it real consistent. So all of my credit cards have the CC at the beginning. All of my notes payable have the NP at the beginning. And then even for like depreciation, I always have, you know, AD for accumulated depreciation, because I need to keep it separate somehow that doesn't require me double checking things. Like it's clear in the name what this is, so I can select what I need when I need it.
I like that a lot. I am inconsistent about it, but I'm like, oh, it would be kind of nice to make it a prefix. That way, as you're looking through, you're typing the name of the thing, you can tell, is this like an expense account or any of those other similarly named stuff? Yeah, I'm liking that. I think I'll adopt it.
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad I could help. So another thing, like you have an asset. Let's say you have a loan on your Ford Focus. I used to have a Ford Focus, so I'll use that as an example, but you probably don't have a Ford Focus in your business account. You don't know, I guess. Anyway, so you have a Ford Focus, but then your loan is also for the Ford Focus, right? So yeah. You have this asset that's the Ford Focus, and then you have the loan that's the Ford Focus. So I always like to have that NP in front of it. And for vehicles, especially if you have a client who has like an entire fleet of things, they might have multiple Chevy Silverados that are 2020 or 2021 or 2022 because they have a lot of money, which is great because then they pay me more. But those people, I like to have the VIN number, the last five or six of the VIN number. That way I can clearly identify which asset it was. So if there's something that happens with like a disposal or a theft or a sale or anything like that, like a refinance, I know what the collateral is for that loan. I can easily put that on a debt schedule or something else, and I don't have to have that panicky feeling in the pit of my stomach because they've asked me for a report on something that I don't know that I can provide. So I try to prevent that as much as possible to reduce my generalized anxiety.
That's pretty fantastic. We briefly touched on sub accounts. I find that I use them some, but I don't use them a lot. Most of my clients, I really don't. So for me, the sub accounts might be, if somebody wants to keep track of their travel, then I'll have a sub account for the kinds of travel. I really don't have a lot. Do you end up with
them all the time? Yeah. I use them all the time. So I love sub accounts because you can roll them up. So when you're providing the report, it's just like, here's your insurance. But then underneath insurance, you can have vehicle insurance, you can have workers' comp insurance, you can have liability insurance. The issue that I have primarily with subaccounts, and it's not that I actually have an issue with subaccounts, I love them. And they're the reason I won't use zero, because it doesn't allow for them. But the issue that I have when it comes to the organization of subaccounts, I tend to struggle with, okay, so you have payroll expenses, and then you have the subaccounts under payroll expenses. Does workers' comp insurance go under that? Or does it go under the insurance? Because it's both.
Right.
And so then that's kind of where I struggle with the subaccounts in my own practice, in my own firm. Like, where should I put this? So I usually defer to the client. Like, hey, where do you want to see this? Do you want to see this as part of your payroll? Do you want to see this as part of your insurance? Defer to your client. It's their account. It's their books. It's their reports. They want to see something. They should be able to tell you what it is that they want to see. Sometimes they can't because they don't know, but a lot of times they will have a preference if you provide them with options.
You're nicer about that than I am. I'm so used to Washington where the workers' comp is mandated by the, it's sold by the state. You can't go to an outside carrier to buy it. And so I just roll it into payroll because I'm like, well, it's, you know, I do a quarterly report for unemployment, for workers' comp, you know, for all of it. And I don't ask them where they want it. I just throw it into payroll taxes and payroll expense.
Sometimes I ask, sometimes I don't. And then honestly, it all comes back to the uniqueness of each account, the uniqueness of your clients. I have some clients who pull their own reports. They know exactly what they've got going on. They're very clear on things. They're like, hey, they'll look at the balance sheet and say, hey, why doesn't the checking account match the statement? Like, I have some really involved clients, and that's awesome. I ask them about everything that I do on the chart of accounts.
Oh, yeah.
They're involved. Yeah. But I also have clients who are like, what's QuickBooks? I just need this number for this loan, for this thing, right?
Yes.
So, and because I have never chosen any sort of niche, any sort of specific industry that I work in. And is it niche? I don't know. It's a word that people use, but a specific type of industry. I'm all over the place. I work with everybody. And that kind of isn't conducive to streamlined processes in a lot of ways. But when I don't know what I was going to say, I lost my train of thought because I got into niche and niche and all of that. But it was something important, I'm sure.
Absolutely. So we can talk about products and services. So,
Oh, yeah.
So when we think about the chart of accounts, we know that the client wants to have information so they can learn stuff. And specifically, if we think about the income, clients want to know where's their money coming from, and they should have that, but maybe not to like the world's tiniest detail, or maybe they should have it to the tiniest detail, but not on the income statement.
Right. And, you know, just for those of you who are new to this industry, new to the bookkeeping world, the income statement is the appropriate accounting term for what QuickBooks has called profit and loss statement. Just so that you're aware of that, it is the income statement, but so many people call it the profit and loss. It's kind of interchangeable at this point because language is fluid and evolves that way. But just so that you know, that's what we're referring to when we say the income statement. I've seen income statements that are 6 pages long, and it's absolutely gargantuan and completely depressing. So in that case, those reports, and because of the chart of accounts being the way the chart of accounts is, they're unreadable. They're not helpful. They're not giving you the information that you actually need. And that is hugely concerning. I see that the most in real estate. So I dabble in real estate a little bit myself. My husband and I have a few properties, and I also have a few REI clients. And the chart of accounts for those can just be astronomical. It can be pages and pages and pages and pages. And that's definitely a problem. So we use the product services instead. So you have income, construction income, you know, rental income, but it doesn't need to be rental income from Joe, rental income from Sue, rental income from Sally.
My gosh.
So you've got customer reports for that, or vendor reports for the expenses that get long, or products and services for, you know, this was drywall. You know, this was wiring. This was HVAC. This was whatever else they're trying to track. Yeah, it makes sense to keep track of how much those types of expenses are, that the cost of goods, or you know, the type of income that you have. But you can do that in a products report. You don't have to have that on your P&L or your income statement. That needs to be concise. Never more than 2 pages. It should not be more than 2 pages long.
I like to think of it like a resume. You're like, mm-hmm. Not more than 2 pages. Don't put extra words in there just because you can. Like, it needs to make sense at a glance.
At a glance. That's exactly right. So in my former life, I was a speech pathologist in the schools. And we have to do what's called an individual education plan. It's called an IEP. And they're like 28 to 50 pages long. It's just ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd. And so then they make us make an at a glance. And it's like, why can't it all just be in the at a glance, which is a page, you know, so that the teachers know what's going on and what that student needs to be successful. It usually can be put on a single document, one page, but all of the other requirements make it almost unreadable. So parents don't know what they're looking at. Teachers don't know what they're looking at. So we have to summarize it. We don't want your business owners to have to come to you to ask you a question about what they're seeing on a 6-page P&L, right? Like, yes, you're at a glance. This is how much money you made. This is how much it cost you to make that money. This is how much you spent on other things. Have a great day. Like, it should be pretty simple.
I think that is the best description of the profit and loss. And like, instead of using the words that I've been using, I'm going to go back, listen to this again and be like, yes, this is how we will be describing income, cost of goods sold, and expenses.
Well, I'm glad this is being recorded because I probably wouldn't be able to say it again. That's just how my brain works. It's like, oh, I come up with a cool thought. Oh, yeah, it's gone. I said it. It's out. It's gone. I don't know anymore. People make fun of me like all the time. My clients and my teammates within Pachira, like, well, better catch it now because as soon as she says it, she's gonna forget. I don't know. It's just how my brain works. But yeah, recording things is awesome. And speaking of that, I use Loom for recording, and it is just the slickest possible thing. I don't like to meet with people that often if I can avoid it, which is ironic because that's what I do for my job. But I do Looms all the time. So I'll even do like a report review in a Loom. Like, you don't have time to meet with me? That is totally fine. You don't need to meet with me? Here is all the things that I just said about the profit and loss in a Loom video. But I don't remember what I said. So, here's what you made. Here's your bottom line. Have a great day. So I do that all the time. I love Looms. My client, I had a meeting today and he was like, hey, can you make a Loom for my vendor so that he knows what it is that I need from him? Sure.
Happy
so
to.
They work. They're very effective. Love videos.
I am the same way. I don't use Loom. I think it's weird when I can see notification if somebody's watched my video. And the reverse is true. So I use Snagit. I use Snagit all the time for basically everything, but the same concept. Like with both of the softwares, you have the ability to use your words and to record your screen, and then you can kind of keep track of where the cursor is going. So when you're trying to show someone something, you can say like, hey, follow my mouse, look at the things mm-hmm. that I'm showing you, which is so much easier than typing out long paragraphs. And mm-hmm. I'm with you on not wanting to meet. Like, I'm happy to meet if there's a purpose, but people who mm-hmm. just want to meet for the sake of meeting, I'm like, no, I don't need this.
Yes. So hopefully Julie listens to this. One of my systems specialists, her name is Julie, and she told me in her prior job, that was like the least favorite thing was meetings with no agenda. She's like, can you please at least give me an agenda so that I can follow along and see what the purpose of meeting with you is? And a lot of times there is no purpose. They just feel like they have to touch base or whatever else. And it's like, you know, there are coffee cups out there that say, I survived another meeting that should have been an email. You know, like it's not unique to the bookkeeping industry that this happens. But what I love about that video recording option is that when you have clients who are really busy and they're not able to meet with you during your office hours, if you set office hours, or just during your awake hours, if you're like me and you do whatever, whenever, they can watch it at their leisure. Here, you know, you're working on it right now. You create that video, you save that video, you share that video with them. They can watch it whenever they want. If they don't want to, that's fine. You're not wasting your time anymore. Like you're doing it all together. And that's something that I tell my coaching clients all the time. Like, keep consistent work in your clients. Don't jump from client to client. Don't do this and then jump back to this and go here and do that. You need to be efficacious in your work because you're setting yourself up for headache and heartache if you're constantly bouncing between. And so you really want to make sure like, okay, I'm working in client ABC today. So I'm going to do everything that I need to do for client ABC today. And that might include that video. Whereas if you have to meet with client ABC, it's like, well, should I do that work right before I'm meeting with them and then not be sure I'm going to be done in time to meet with them?
Right.
That's stressful.
That's hugely stressful. I love that. I love the dedicate your time, focus on the thing. One of my favorite tools or softwares for that, not for that, but for my brain, because I get excited, is Mailman HQ. There's a handful of softwares that'll do this, but I have to put my email on hold because if I see an email come in, it feels like an action item. So when I'm channeling my inner bookkeeper rather than my inner trainer, I'm like, okay, if I put my email on hold, I can like look at the email that the client I'm working on had sent last week, but I don't see the new emails coming in.
Oh, I
need that.
That's a cool idea. I had never even heard of that. So what I usually do, and everybody has their own process, and that's something that I think is really important, is to determine what your process is for you, what works best for you. I am undiagnosed ADD, so I have to be very careful about my hyperfocus versus my not being able to focus at all, because it's one or the other. I'm on or off. It just, I don't know, could be 3 days in a row where I get absolutely nothing done, and then 18 hours where I get it all done in a row. So I have to kind of plan for my own brain. And that's the beauty of running your own business, is you can plan for your own brain, but you have to have the processes in place that work for you. So, you know, I find when I'm downloading some sort of templated item, it's like, ugh, I'm going to have to fix this so that it works for me. So identify what it is that works for you. Is it, do you need to just close your email completely and have a downloaded PDF of the email that you're looking at? That's what I've done. I didn't know there was an email queue program out there. So that's a new thing, but that can help a lot to clear that clutter.
I like that. Yeah. A downloaded PDF is freaking good. Cause you can draft your response in Notepad and then copy and paste it over.
Well, and I use ClickUp for pretty much everything, and you can email from ClickUp. So like you can be within the task itself, and it's the task card, and you can email from there, and you can have notes that are internal, and you can do all that other stuff. I also use Keeper for some of my clients that have a more complicated month end process. And so you can put notes in there as well. Ideally, Oh yeah. So I use Keeper for the complicated month end processes. And so then you can keep notes in there as well. So having like a clear cut, this is how I do this, really helps to kind of refresh, come back around. This is how I need to do this task. This is the task that I need to do next. And I'm going to do it this way because I have my process in place. And then I can use the tools. One of my teacher friends recently was telling me about a win that she had with some of her students. She's some kindergartners who were having some behavior issues, and she pulled out all the stops like at the beginning of the year to give them some resources that they could kind of combat their behavior problems. And she was like, you know what? I just didn't have the energy to wait and see if it was going to get better. It's like, girl, why would you wait when you have, like, if you see someone who is drowning, you throw them the pool needle now. Right? Like you don't wait to throw the lifesaver or the life jacket or the pool noodle or whatever it is if you see that someone's struggling. And I hate that about the education industry, I guess you could call it, because that's what they do. It's a wait and see. Don't do that within your own business. Don't wait and see if it's going to work. Like give yourself those resources. Pay the $60 a month for a program that helps save you hours. Your time is worth it. Your time is worth it. I mean, if you're not making any money, don't. But
yeah, but like when you can, I was having this discussion on Facebook earlier today where people were talking about their favorite free programs. And I'm mm-hmm. like, that's really nice, but the free program doesn't work with my brain. I use Financial Sense to keep track of my to-do list because it works with my brain. And if I'm able to do the thing, then I'm able to get more stuff done. And so, sure, I'm spending money, but I'm also saving time because I'm not spending much time staring at the program thinking, how does it work? I can't remember how it works. Oh my gosh, I'm so stuck.
Right. And there's also, you know, we tell our bookkeeping clients all the time, hey, you're not good at this. Let me do it. There are things that we aren't good at that we need to let other people do. There's so many different tasks that like totally, you know, screeching halt to our productivity because, crap, I don't want to have to do that task. Delegate that bad boy. Get him off your to-do list. Delegate him to somebody else. If you don't have employees, find a contractor, find a consultant, find somebody else who knows what they're doing, who can just pick that task up for you. It makes all the difference. So like setting up systems is a huge one. People will come to Pachura for that because we have people who know how to use the software. We've dedicated the time to learn it. You as a business owner probably don't have 20 some hours to invest in learning an entire software just so that then you can try to set it up for your current clients. And that's ridiculous. You shouldn't have to do that. There are options. There are solutions to that out there.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think the thing that people don't appreciate or understand as much as they could or should is that 20 some odd hours that I'm sure your team spent way more than that learning the software is so that they can take the knowledge and distill it down to the half a dozen things that the end user who has hired you needs to know. It's no different than when people hire for QuickBooks training. Like, all of us have gone through a bajillion hours to learn what we know. Right. So that way small business owners, bookkeepers can call either one of us and say, hey, how do I do the thing? And we're like, OK, let me just go to the bank of information in my head and be like, I'll show you how to do the thing, rather than asking them to learn and do and all that.
We live in the age of information. There's no reason for every single one of us to say, all right, I'm going to figure this all out on my own. Like, what? Someone else has figured it out. Let them do it.
Exactly. And not that you couldn't, but like, you got into business to do a thing. And if you spend all of your time learning how to do all the other things, you're never going to do the thing. And suddenly you just have a really expensive hobby because you spent all this time learning and training to do things that you only needed once. Like learning how to set up your software and your systems, you needed that once.
Like, well, and the problem with that too is you can't bill your clients for that.
No.
Oh, like, it doesn't impact your clients. It doesn't improve your service to your clients for you to invest in time to learn a software for yourself. If you're going to invest in, like, you know, people say I need to work on my business, not in my business. Yes, you do. But the things that you need to be investing in are things that can boost your value to your clients. Improving your efficiency is one thing. Boosting your value is something else. Like, become an expert in builder trend if you're a contractor guy, you know, become an expert in Stripe if you're doing online retail. Learn things that are going to improve your chances of providing excellent service to your people. Don't spend a whole bunch of time just reading random articles. You'll get lost. It's drinking from a fire hose. There's so many different industries and there's so many different things. You've got to focus in on the things that apply to your current clients. That doesn't mean you have to have a niche. Don't mishear me. But focus in on the things that are applicable to you or applicable to where you want your business to go.
Yeah, for reals. Yeah, look down the road and see, like, where am I driving this car?
Is this going to be helpful to me? Did I just put in, water sealer around the windows and I'm planning to fly? You know, like, you don't need it to be watertight if you're going to fly. There's a lot of different things that you can just set completely aside. And that's fine. I had someone tell me just today, I don't want to learn. I don't want to learn real estate. Cool. You don't have to. Outsource that to somebody else. Get rid of that client altogether. Tell them you're not a good fit for them. Focus in on the things that you enjoy, that you're interested in.
Yeah. As you say that, I'm thinking about Canva and how I do not enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I'm so glad to have a person on the team who loves that stuff.
I know. Well, I'm even thinking about this podcast. Like, I don't know how to use any of the equipment. I have to ask somebody to tell me how to, and that's fine because I have someone I can delegate that to. I have someone who enjoys doing it, who actually gets pleasure from the work. And so I can offload that. I can outsource that to them. And I don't have to clutter up my already completely insane brain with things that don't benefit me in the long run, right? Can I get on here and talk into the microphone in a way that it works? Yeah, that's all I need to be able to do. And I can still, focus on being more of the bookkeeping expert. I don't have to be a podcast expert to have a podcast.
Yeah, I feel the same way, and I'm super thankful.
Yeah, we have a really, really amazing tech. I guess that's what we call her, is tech now. I don't know. But shout out to Kayla for being the best thing and helping make this podcast happen. She's the bomb. So anyway, delegate things. It matters. Makes a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's 100%. I'm just thinking about, like, the things people delegate to both of our businesses, the things that we delegate within our own business, the things that we see our clients delegate, the times that we see our clients not delegating. And we're like, oh my gosh, for tiny money, you could delegate that. And then you could go do anything else that brings you joy and gives you ROI, right? Like, my learning how to use Canva does not give me an ROI. Me taking a course to learn how to do a thing better, explain a thing better, that could be ROI.
Well, and it's also just about the overwhelm. So, I have a bunch of clients who come to me like, I'm growing so fast and I need to do this and I need to do that and I need to do this and I need to do that and I need to learn this so that I can do that. Because most bookkeepers want to be excellent. I want to be really good at this and I want to make sure I'm doing it right. And I want to be really good at this and I want to make sure I'm doing it right. focus that energy on the bookkeeping work. You mm-hmm. don't have to be a marketing expert. You don't have to be a technology expert. You don't have to be a software expert. You don't have to be a networking expert. Just focus in on being a good bookkeeper and people will come to you. They will like the work that you're doing and you will continue to be successful. Outsource that other stuff. You don't need to learn how funnels work. You don't need to know all of that. You don't need to know how to do all of the different things on Facebook and on Instagram and on whatever, all the LinkedIn. I'm not even on any of those platforms. Like, I don't do that. You don't have to do those things. Be an excellent bookkeeper and that reputation gets around, man.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Accounting Almanac. You can visit me at jennifrog.com and you can visit Becky's website at PachiraBusinessSolutions.com.